Yes, I realize that. Here it is. Okay. Alrighty, thank you, everybody. The program continues as always. After this, we have a speech from the 907, and leading into that, we're going straight into, I think we're going straight into Win NFF's t-shirts, but don't quote me on that. And like I said before, it's my game. Please show up, play. Audience, fun, t-shirts. But more importantly, here we have Philippe Langlois. Just to read his bio straight out of the packet, he's the co-founder and chief technology officer of Qualys, and is a veteran of network security, internet services, and interesting experiences with a paranoid Kevin Paulson at DEF CON. You can ask him more about that later. His speech is entitled Turning Network Vulnerability Assessment Management Outside In. Did you manage to get a network connection up? Did you manage to get a network connection up for your demonstration?
Or? No, but I have a CAP demo, so it's just like the online. It's just like a web get of a web image of the online pages. If I manage later to get the connection, I'll try to do it online and to make the real thing with real packets flowing.
Yeah, and so we're going to be busily working on that. But without any further ado, please welcome Philippe Langlois.
So thank you everybody. First of all, I must announce it's my first conference in English. So if you manage to actually understand something, congratulations. First of all, thank you for being here. And I try to get it working Detroit style. What I'm going to speak about, if PowerPoint let me do it, is basically about network vulnerability scanning. Are you all a bit familiar with TCP/IP? Yeah. What I'm going to present is how we got into this business. Since it started as a group of friends, and then I'll do a little demo of what we do. That's bad. I can't get my Windows 2000. To work with the network here. So if you, by chance, know a PowerPoint replacement for Linux, tell it to me. That's the only thing I boot under this laptop for with Windows 2000. So that's about it. Then we'll speak about, if you want, the scanning technology and architecture that we use, which is quite different compared to the other scanning technology out there.
Yes?
I'm sorry?
Could you do this whole thing with Netscape in an HTML document?
Well, it lacks the tiny, fancy animation stuff, but you're right, and I love that. Impressive.
Like, you wouldn't have to use Microsoft at all?
Yes. Actually, I don't know if Microsoft export to DHTML with layers, because with layers, basically, you could do it. But I wonder, I think not. And too bad my VMware doesn't want to work full screen because the DGA extension of X340 doesn't work with this laptop. Okay. I missed something. I want to speak also a bit about the future, and then this will be interactive. I hope I'll get lots of questions. So first of all, just about quickly about the company. So we founded that company was 5 persons at the beginning of the company. It was in March 99, so it's been only 2 years that we've been doing business. It was for before everything, we could say it's about money, it's about the team. The value of the individual that started the stuff and the value of the individual who came in to the company were really everything that made the product and the company that we did. Otherwise, all the money, et cetera, it's more. You know, there's lots of company with lots of money who do bad product, and we tried to get the good people to get the good product before everything. We went live in December 99. So as for the beginning, we were always an ASP, an application service provider, providing network security services. Like was mentioned by Rick before, we never did shrink wrap software. Right now, we have, since the first round of financing, our HQ in Sunnyvale, California, and the research and development is still completely in France. And yeah, we just finalized some new financing. I guess the CEO would be pleased to see that on the screen. So why did the market want in the first time some vulnerability scanner? First of all, it's about consultants most of the time and security people. When you have vulnerability on a network, it's about 5, 10, 20 sometimes vulnerabilities for the unlucky ones. Out of 900, there are more than 900 remote vulnerability. I'm speaking only about remote ones. That means vulnerability that can be exploited by anybody who can reach by TCP IP packets the destination machine. So this is tedious. It takes lots of time. So basically, at the beginning, people wanted a scanner just to automate that. Then the consultants sell what? They sell reports. And at the beginning, about network vulnerability, nobody knew what it was. Back in 1991, very few people were on the internet. It was just the beginning of scanner software, and there were consultants like at Ernst & Young and Arthur Andersen were there and saying, okay, how do I solve this bitch? I have lots of people asking me about what is my network security level, and I don't have a clue. Couldn't I have some tool to generate a big report? So at the beginning, it started by a question. Lots of people asking lots of questions, and you got your report at the end. It was 500 and enough to slam someone on the head to say, you did a bad job. And then they automated it with a product which could generate huge reports. And that's good. It was huge reporting capability with Crystal Report, whatever. You got some for some Class C, 500 pages of paper. Imagine that. For a Class C, so 254 machine at most, and usually it's not that filled. It's just not that filled up. You have 100 machines, and sometimes you have 4 pages by machine. Well, and that's common. So that was the first generation of scanners. Then the updateness. Now you know that every scanning product have something which says in their brochure, we auto-update ourselves. We do some tests, and we get the updates instantly, or sometimes they say that just you can download the update on the web. Well, now there's a real issue on that, because even if it auto-updates, how much time a week or how much time a month are the updates really present on the web server?
Oops.
No. So now the new needs are about false positive. It's about getting some software which doesn't spit out 10 pages for a box which has no vulnerabilities. It's about also reducing the reports. Not having these 500 pages report and trying to get that into action items. It's very hard for some big companies now who have, let's say, 10 Class C network around the world, and they want to coordinate the security effort between all these networks. As you know, one vulnerability in one of the network is just sufficient for a hacker to get in. So they just want to transform the 500 pages report into maybe 5 reports of 100 pages correctly dispatched to the correct people, but more often they would just like to send emails with action items saying you have to do that and that and that to secure your networks. And there's no need anymore to slam people on the head with big reports. Okay, you know certainly some commercial product for which the license is easier to get for some hackers with generators than for the legitimate consultant who actually pay it. This is also a big problem. And when you have a network environment constantly changing, you can't wait 3 months to get a new license. And that's a big, big problem. Same thing for installation. Sometimes installing a sufficient number of PC to scan your network can take a lot of time. It's about firepower. Oh, information warfare people would just love it. They would just say, firepower, that's neat. We could add this speech into our presentation. No. Firepower is something very important. When you have, for example, one class B and 20 class C around the world, to scan that, it takes a while with existing products. And you can, of course, scale by adding new bugs. But then you have each, if you have three bugs, you get three reports. And then you'll be able to parallelize with three machines. But then you'll have to merge the reports, take the essence of it, and then redispatch it to people. It's just a pain in the ass. Let me tell you, before doing that, this security company, I was into, I co-founded another company which was in the business of computer security consulting. And I've been doing that for 3 years in France, doing reports, all these things. I know what it takes to get a proper penetration testing or just vulnerability assessment mission. It's quite some work if you want to do it right. And when I'm speaking about this problem, I lived it, believe me. Just 1 second, I'm going to take off that. I'm overheating. No, the stripper would be later. Now, I'll speak about how we did things, our newer approach. So, first of all, let's speak about the false positive. The false positive mainly are due to the way you test things. Basically, there's not so much way to test things. There's the banner matching. You connect to a port, and then you get the banner, and you say, oh, it says sendmail.864. Then I got a problem. But this is unreliable. That's where my French jumps in. Anybody can fake it. Then you have some problems with the reporting, just getting reporting in the proper way. For the installation, having the license always up to date. And since we are online, we have some customer service people who just can do it online. And as soon as they do it, it's available for the person. So that solved quite the problem. And the scanning firepower problem. Due to our architecture, we are distributed. As I will show after the demonstration, we have a set of servers who just stand there to do the scanning. It's just like content delivery network for Akamai. Think about it in the scanning way. We have lots of boxes. We just wait for order to scan. Okay, I know, it's a hacker dream. But believe me, it's protected. And if you want to take a hit to it, go try it. It would be interesting, actually, if you found problem. But we try to secure that. Actually, what's interesting is that we try to secure it, not if the problem if the network, our network, will be compromised, but when it will be compromised. Because someday there's a smart one who is going to say, hey, Phil, you know what? Your server is very, very uniquely protected with a smile like that, with a grin. And I'm like, yeah, thanks. And you mean that you broke it? Sure. And the last part is about integration. Basically, everybody loves the scanners that exist out there, but they just want the tool. Well, when I have a big scanner which does everything, and when I have Nmap, I love Nmap because it's easy. I just launch my stuff. Well, but Nmap lacks some feature that you need to have when you're going to test some machine. You don't want to bring machines down. We've seen HPU, Xbox, boom, with this kind of tools. But you want also all the tools available through one API. So, okay, the API is XML, but there's other things than shit, which is accessible through XML, right? So we try to open the architecture to enable people to have the tool at hand and not have to go through the API.
Oops.
going to be quick on that. Okay, just about the company. So for integration, we have people like eSecurity Online, which is a spin-off of Ernst & Young, like UBZen, Cable and Wireless. These people are integrating our product into their portal. For consultant, basically they want to have the scanning infrastructure at their fingertips, and they don't want to set up another box for another customer, so they can create the account for the customer and do all the scan online. And we have still some people who just want to do business with us, just to have the technology and to develop things. Like, we are scanning the macOS boxes, and we are doing lots of research on it. So if among you there are some people who are interested into that, just drop by and see me.
Okay.
I'm going to do now not an online demo, but an offline demo. So basically, it's just like we use something like Teleport Pro or Wget, and we just select a standard access for a customer. So what you'll see is actually the result of some session from some user, and if I'll get the connection working on Windows later, what we will be able to do is to do a real live demo. Okay, so here what we have is the environment as when you log into our application. It's web-based, so if you can see it. So there's basically, I'm into Internet Explorer, and it's something which is protected through SSL and a standard login and password. So first thing you want to do when you do a vulnerability assessment is you want to discover your network. Usually, you ask one person who has security problems and want to do a vulnerability assessment, what are your IPs, sir? And the guy will say to the customer service, okay, I think I have this and this IP. And the IP will not be with dots and number. It will be www.mydomain.com. And then you say, okay, let's try to find out. So, being lazy, we said, okay, let's just give the tools to the actual customer to do himself his discovery.
So what we do is we do what we call a Qualys map. A Qualys map is a graphic discovery. Basically, it's a little Java applet. And it takes information from routing and DNS, and we do DNS brute force, DNS zone transfer, DNS reverse resolving, queries through WHOIS, and I'll explain later our inference engine model, which is quite different, which enable us to reinject some data and find a lot of information about the hosts. So what we are doing, we are able to get the machines, and we are able to say, okay, it has this IP, then it's running Windows 2000. For some bugs, we are able to give out the port. Obviously, this was not enabled for this demo. Okay, and
that mic should be on.
It should be on. Okay, excellent. And we are able to basically to map the external appearance of a domain. Then the user will just proceed to scan it. It say, okay, first of all, maybe I don't have to scan everything. Too bad, that's less money for us, but I mean the technology, so I don't care. He will just say, I need to reduce my exposure. I need to reduce the number of hosts which are visible, because basically that's about it. It's about limiting the entry points to your network. And here, it's not about security through obscurity. It's about making the hack much harder for the hacker, because it doesn't protect you not to disclose IP addresses you're using, but if it takes 10 hours to the user to have your complete addresses description, than 2 minutes by doing a whiz on your name, it's better. So it will first reduce the exposure by trying to have very few machines listed in the DNS, very fewer machines, because obviously this is horrible for security in this current state. And then it will do the scan of a few machines. And the scan, so here when I click, it's going to take 1 second. Usually it takes 3 minutes to 15 minutes at most. And you have the progression bar with the vulnerabilities which are found. So later I explain what are the scanning thread and how we leverage on our inference engine model for that. Yeah?
I'm assuming this is a really noisy scan. You're going to set off every alarm in the world when you do this.
Okay, if you have an IDS, yes. That means that, Snort, Real Secure, all this product will go crazy and say, hacker alert. But in terms of network performances and service robustness, two of the prerequisites of our scan is never do denial of service, never alter network performances. And when we say network performances, I'll explain how we control our bandwidth usage and also how we never lower the security level. For example, there are vulnerabilities which enable you to make a filter of certain firewall to drop. We don't do that. We test it with other ways, but we won't enable a hacker to go through because we are doing our tests. This would be too horrible. Does it answer your question? Okay.
For your discovery, how much bandwidth are you actually utilizing?
It's mentioned later, so but I'll go in depth to explain you the details at this moment. Yes, sir.
Okay,
about
outside border security routers.
I'm sorry, I don't hear you.
On the border routers, if I'm blocking ICMP packets for your reconnaissance, and I'm using NATed addresses inside, and I resolve on my outside subnet the DNS, and
so first of all, about the ICMP question, you prevent your network from receiving ICMP echo requests. So basically what we call a ping sweep won't succeed on your network. Okay, this is the second question. I'll speak about it later. The first part of it is our host alive, basically to test if hosts are up and running, what we call ping sweep. We do it with ICMP, of course, but also with TCP and UDP packets and on common ports. So basically, even if you prevent your machines...
That would only work in an IP filtering environment. It won't work in a proxy. I have a proxy up to the front. It's not there's won't work in an IP filtering environment.
Well, you already have some IP, the proxy IP, which will be up and running. That, of course, if you have either a proxy or a firewall with a NAT, the packets won't jump it. They will stay on the outer perimeter. No, because basically there's nothing which can, except with some particular kind of firewall. Yeah, you know it. I know it. Thanks, Thomas Lopatic and John McDonald for it. And the second question was about basically the NAT. Okay. And DNS. And DNS zone transfer. Basically, what you'll have is you still have a domain, or at least you will have a WizNet block. So basically, when you tell us your WizNet block, what we will do is host live on this WizNet block, and then we will have at least the firewall, maybe not, and the proxy addresses showing up. But even if that is not at all presenting anything, we won't jump into the internal network to do the assessment. What we are doing is outside perimeter, outside vulnerability scanning. So at least we will prevent and detect vulnerabilities from sitting on the box which are exposed to everybody on the internet. That's what we do. Okay? And the thing is that if do I answer your question? I'm not sure.
Yeah, obviously you're not going to go into the core LAN, but if sure. I have either a reverse proxy set up
then we'll pick it up. Then we'll be able, for example, you have a squid.
I'm not allowing you to, commercial.
Okay,
work
the
not.
Tool is to see what you have accessible to the public internet.
Right.
That's about it.
Taking care of that.
I'm going to make an example of what you say. Let's say you have an accelerator proxy, like Squid in accelerator mode. So basically, you'll have an IIS box, for example. Let's say an IIS box, an NT box with IIS, on your internal NATed environment. And then, on the port 80 of your proxy, which will filter every port except the port 80, then you will have this accelerator which enable you to connect to the internal IIS. We'll pick up that the port 80 is present on this machine, and then we'll do the full assessment through this machine on this internal IIS box. And for example, let's say that your box runs MSADC script. Then we'll be able to find out, and we'll be able to say, you have a vulnerability which enables us to run commands. And we'll find out that. And then maybe this machine is not on a separated DMZ, and then we'll be able to jump onto the internal network. Yes, this is correct. But whatever you're giving us to scan, if it's not reachable by IP packets, we won't be able to audit it. Okay? I think that answer. Then, here what you say is the result of our scan. Our scan is about now something like 850 or 900 vulnerabilities, remote vulnerabilities. Let's speak about the number war. Sorry for the accent. I'm trying to improve it. There's lots of people in the marketing department saying, okay, we have 900, we have 1,000, we have 2,000 vulnerabilities. And this is some kind of war about trying to have the higher number. For example, we don't quote root with password root as one vulnerability. It's for all the accounts that have default password, it's about default password. That's it. So when I say 900 vulnerabilities, when you have Lotus Notes with 70 vulnerable database open on a standard Lotus R5 installation, I'm speaking of one vulnerability. So don't think too much about the number. Think about what it does. And the best way to see what it does is actually to run a scan and do a sniff while the scan is going on, and you'll definitely see what it's doing.
Do you know if the IDS is out there, if your scan is distinctive enough, they're going to identify your product?
No. Okay. We are not into, right now, we are not into the, how to say, the list of common identified scan. And that's too bad, because obviously when you look at a TCP dump trace of what we do, that's quite obvious that's us. It's not like that with other scanning products, and each scan has a very specific signature. So I think in the future, if we are a very successful company, they will do it, sure. Okay, then I view the report. As you can see, the vulnerability have a range from 5, which is basically you got a big problem. Actually, I think there's something about the vulnerability problem. 5 means read and write, access to files, remote execution, or backdoor, which is definitely present. Then it goes to the level 1, just about gathering information. Then for the report, so basically what you have is the duration, your customer and the company which was doing it, the target host, but also the scan host, which is important because sometimes you want to see in your firewall logs which was this machine doing the scan, and oh, yes, that was the scanner from Qualys. But in the middle of all that, you can have one hacker who took advantage of this window of opportunity to go unnoticed, and you want to filter that. then you have all the vulnerabilities which were detected. So tooltalk. Somebody know tooltalk vulnerability? Oh, yeah. Okay. And then about the other funny things. Well, CMSD, RPC, RPC. Yeah. That's Washington University, FTP, and blah, 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 all this. It's a readable with a public community. This is, I'm going to tell you, SCO. Oh, SCO, that's so great. So much good results. Actually, that's always that, because people who have a report with nothing in it, just saying, well, yes, the machine is present, running that and that, they are so, sad. And I'm like, well, that's a good thing. Come on. Even if our product didn't find something, that's a good thing. And some people are terribly sad to see, oh, it's well patched. It's incredible, but whatever. Things you may want to see which are interesting. So what? There's funny things that we do. We do raw RPC scanning, which means that, and I'm not sure a lot of product do that. If we do a scan and the port mapper is not present, not only we are able to do the exploit to services which are not listed, but we are able to recreate the list. So we are able to recreate what port mapper would hold as an information.
I suppose you'll tell us how you do that.
Huh? Okay, how we do that? It's fairly simple. Actually, we don't, and as you know, we don't too much publish, at least we don't publish under Qualys name when we find things, because for the moment, we didn't have marketing resources. And publishing advisories is all about marketing resources. It takes 5 minutes to find all. Sometimes it takes 5 months to get an answer from the people doing the software. And we just can't afford to be 5 months on the phone asking, when can I publish my advisory, boy? Well, and we don't want to be mean at software companies, so just leave it. So to answer your question, what we do to detect RPC programs is basically we detect open ports, which are not picked up by our service discovery as HTTP or HTTPS or these things. And then what we do is we send raw RPC packets already encoded with XDR encoding, and we brute force the version number. And when you hit the correct version number, bam, you get the result. That's a funny thing. It works completely differently if you looked severely at the Linux, Solaris, HP UX, DecOSF implementation, digital True 64, whatever they call it. And it's completely different. They handle the coding completely differently, and they have error handling completely differently. I'll speak about that. It's what we call and what we are working on, daemon fingerprinting. We are not speaking anymore about fingerprinting machine. We want to fingerprint daemons now. A funny other thing. That's okay. Yeah. Let's say that's okay. So now you got the report, so you may want to have information about, for example, this is one machine with the different service on it. Actually, that's quite a old version of the report. I don't know when date from. Oh, yeah, December 2000. Yeah. Then you have scan options. Basically, you can do scheduler. Scheduler saying you want for each Monday at 9 a.m., you want your security reports on all the security of your machine for the security meeting, you can do it. Yes?
Can you go back a page?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Ask it, yeah.
The other one's date was not December, it was another one as well. October. I was just wondering, you published the date in military form.
Military format. I think we moved to American format because now most of our customers, I think, are in the U.S. But I'm not from the military originally, so don't worry. Okay, and then there are some scanner options. Scan dead host. The host alive, do we really take it in account? That means that even if you have a heavily firewalled environment, you just do scan dead host and the full TCP scan, and then you're sure to pick up anything that sits on the network, even if it has only one port open in 33,000 plus ports. And that happens. Then it's about the bandwidth usage. So here it is. About the bandwidth usage, what we do is we first enable the user to select what the bandwidth usage he wants to have. Then here we don't put percentage, but roughly the percentage of the bandwidth he uses are for low 5%, then 30%, 50%, 80%, and 95%. Okay? And what is interesting is the bandwidth which is available. Basically what we do is when we do a scan, we send little probe packets. This is typically what Nmap doesn't do. And this probe packet helps us to measure the runtime trip which the packets have to go back and forth between us, between our scanner server doing the scan, and the remote machine. If the runtime trip increase, so that means that there are more network latency, so more network usage, we'll just throttle back the scanner by increasing the delay. So that has a lot of advantages. The user can use high bandwidth usage. If he has 10,000 customers who are actual customers wanting to order over his e-commerce web, he can still do the scan because our scanner will throttle back. That's very important. The other very important thing is that there's no actual preset value. That means that there's no pound define acceptable timeout and 1500 milliseconds. We just are adaptable. So if you are running IP over a Sonnet ring, or if you are doing IP over X25, you know definitely that these two have opposite runtime trips and opposite performances. IP over X25 is just way too slow. But still, when you're doing scan between US and Mauritius, for example, every single connection to Mauritius is either through satellite, so 600 millisecond delay at minimum, or through IP, or through X25. So basically, it takes a while, and we are definitely just adapted to that as we adapt ourselves to IP over ATM or SONET. So that's very important when you do lots of scan on a lot of machine which are not with the same network environment. And then the little emails. That may be dumb, but it's very important. Basically, you don't want to care about vulnerability scanning. You don't want to be the one clicking on it. You don't want to be the one maintaining the different bugs that will do it. But you want to be the one to have the result. So basically, we just send a little email to the user saying, hey, you got a report, click here. And then you'll be able to access through SSL with password protected mode to your report. No report in email. I don't want to have my security resume on postcard. This was your question.
Oh, yeah.
I figured that out, so I increased the speed to say it. So basically, instant support to get support quite as soon as you can. Some kind of online help with, and I'm pissed off at the marketing people, the vulnerability list, look at it. It's horrible. There's nothing. Three things for each category. No, right now I think we are near the 900 vulnerability scans, so don't worry about this list. Okay, that's about it for the the offline demo. I'll try to get this thing running in the network room at midnight tonight to see real live demo. So, and this hopefully will not be under Win 2000. Okay. Now, the real good stuff. Oh, before a question, and no more.
Quick question.
Yes.
For your secure logins, do you enforce complex passwords?
The password, yes. You're forced to have some password which have letters and numbers, and so it's not perfect. Usually the people just write it down. Whatever. So let's speak about the interesting thing. Now, how we did it. I can't walk with this thing. Can I? Okay, the thing which are really interesting here is that we designed the whole architecture, since it's ASP, to be secure, scalable, and that's very important. And to achieve that, it had to be separated between the different machines. So what we have is we have the user sitting in his insecure environment and wanting to have secure communication to a web server and to have secure storage of his report, and not to bring his machine down, and to do the thing which won't hurt him any kind of problem afterward. So what we came up was an architecture which is like an onion, and we tried to make it as stinky as possible for hackers. So the onion is basically what we call, if you've been into a military IT environment, it's about what they call multiple layer security, or MLS basically. And it's like an MLS network. We have the same rules with no read up, no write down. This is something where you first of all go through a first layer of external firewall IDS to access the web application server. And the web application server will handle every request of customers. They will, what we saw as an interface, so it was a web interface, it's exactly that, that is done by the web application server. And the web application server will be here to interact with the database server, which are the center of the onion. They are protected by three layers of IDS and firewalls to ensure its security. And that's in the database server that are stored the reports of the user. But let's say that there is a bright kid coming up with a new exploit who is able to go through all the layers of firewall, go jump on a box which is on the non-routed internal network, and actually access the database. If such kid was able to do a select on our SQL database, it would probably be able to have access to all the reports of our customer. And that's when the MSP security jumps in. How can we trust a company which have every security report of the companies it's securing? It's very dangerous. So the solution we came up with was just to encrypt the reports with the end user password. And we don't keep the end user password. This way, if we get, and when we get routed by a kid, at most, he will be able to jump into the database server, do a select on the database, and see all the encrypted reports. So if he actually want to decrypt each of the reports, he has to be sitting on the database server, on the web application server, to listen for the password of the users when they log in, and to do that, he has to ptrace the PHP processes, and then jump in where in the memory is stored for a very little amount of time the password. It's a nightmare. I did the exploit myself of trying to do that. It just doesn't work 50% of the time. Just too quick to be properly done. So basically, he couldn't compromise all our customer in a snap. And that's the important thing. We are not open for mass hack. And if a person could do some mass hack, it would only be to compromise the whole architecture and be able to distribute scan jobs to the scan server. Yeah.
If they compromise your box, why wouldn't they just snag a copy of your database and take it offline
and crack it?
Crack them, or just continue to sniff your usernames and passwords and use them against their local copy.
Yes, that's the interesting part. Continue to sniff the username and password. Don't you think that we have administrators who are completely paranoid and looking all the time about the security of the box?
But I don't necessarily have to sniff it at your connection. I need to sniff it somewhere in between you and them.
in SSL, and then you want to crack SSL certificate. Hey, remember, one of our investors is VeriSign, so to get new certificate each day if we want, it's not a problem. I'm sorry? No, go ahead.
Anyone can get a certificate from VeriSign and just say they're you, right?
Of course, if then you're into VeriSign infrastructure and generate the certificate for me, then you can sniff wherever you want. You have the program which does that?
They violated their own policy for certificate allocation.
With Microsoft Affair, something like four weeks ago. Yeah, I haven't heard about it. Whatever. So basically, on that, sniffing and getting the password will be a hard job. The other part of it is cracking. Oh, that's interesting. Cracking it. Okay, it's IDEA. Do you know IDEA? Do you know how easy it is to crack it? Is it easy? If one of you tell me it's easy, well, I probably hire him. Okay, then the external part of the onion is that scanning server. These scanning servers are just self-contained appliances. We just rack them, and they are when you can say outplug, and then they are available on the application bus to listen for scan requests. And they pick up a scan request and say, okay, I'm going to do the scan. If we need tomorrow and for example, that's the case, we have a business opportunity in Hong Kong where we don't want to go through the transatlantic cables or the transpacific cables or the satellites to reach Hong Kong. We want to have the shorter runtime trips to this machine. So there's an intrinsic advantage of being able to ship appliances to Hong Kong to collocate them in a secure collocating facility and then have them do the scan locally. And that's very important because when you speak about, for example, let's say Microsoft, they have a VPN for all their remote subsidiaries like in France and England, and there are also some other parts which are quite isolated. And each of these have an exposure. When they want to scan it, they would have to have tens of bucks to be able to scan it in a snap. If they want to have the same performances of like us parallelizing the scan request and then having the scan report coming in very quickly, it's just a tedious process of doing the scans from each location and then having people updating the soft, installing the soft there. That's just about, we're answering the same question as Akamai is answering with content delivery, but here it's for scanning. Yeah.
What's to keep me from convincing your server to do a search on that network over there that I want to get into, mm-hmm. and then just sniffing the packets that you're running in your name from your IP as they're coming by?
Sniffing so legitimate scan.
Yeah, I'm sniffing your legitimate scan, and I'm going to take your information that you're going to generate.
Yes, two questions here for you that you ask. First, how can I trust identification that is done? What we use is RSA 768-bit between the web application server object broker and the scanner server. And here we don't need to have anybody generating certificate for us for that. So definitely you'll have to hack our machines to get to this RSA identification. That's very hard to hack. Second part about the session. How to be sure that you don't listen to the scan results, which are in raw format, sent from the remote scanner server to the web application server. It's, once again, IDEA encrypted. And there's a session key for each.
No.
It's not the same as the encryption in the database, huh?
Web application server.
Yeah, I'm snipping in between in the internet.
Between
and
that and that.
Data
from these to that?
Yes.
From our scanner server to target server?
And I'll listen to what they're going to say back to you, and I'm going to...
Come on. Two things. If you're going to do that, then you have already the technology to do as good scan as we do, first of all. And the second thing is that when you have a TCP dump or a sniff or a sniffit session of some scan, have you ever tried to replay it and actually interpret the result as our system do? Man, one thing that we did, we recoded the NetBIOS stack by reverse engineering the Windows implementation. It's legal in France, and it's a law in Europe, thanks DMCA. The thing is that doing that, it's a pain to then reconstruct the response and to analyze what it is for. Does it mean that the vulnerability is present or not? It's very, very painful. So just listening in the middle is worth nothing. If you're going to do that, you already have the power to scan this machine by your own. No, here's the real question is about how keeping us from being a source of mass hack and of mass compromising. Because basically then running scan, anybody can do it. Running scan with our firepower, that's a different matter. So first of all, about the architecture, did I answer everything? And don't I take too much time? Okay, it's already 11, I'm gonna speed up. Okay. Then, the real thing, the inference engine. Basically, when you look at the other scanners, what they are cookbook-based. They have a set of tests that they have to do, and then they have a logic tree. Is this machine a Windows machine? Yes. So I do all the Windows tests on it. Is this machine a Unix machine? Yes. Then, is it Linux? Is it Linux? Yes. So the RPC ranges are between 700 in TCP and 800 in TCP. And this kind of things. It will make decision and follow a logic tree. This is flawed. This is flawed for a number of reasons. First of all, now you have strange setups, like Solaris box with, too bad the person left, but Solaris box with SCREED proxy in accelerator mode, proxifying every connection to the port 80 to a box which is running IIS. Then, if you have a logic tree based scanner, what are you going to do? Are you going to say, I'm going to scan for Solaris vulnerabilities or for anti-vulnerabilities? The answer is scan for Solaris vulnerabilities on the TCP/IP stack, but for the port 80, you're sure that it has the daemon fingerprinting signature of an IIS and not just the banner. So what you're going to do is you're going to try all the tests for IIS. And that, definitely, cookbook-based scanner or logic tree-based scanner have a hard time with that. Then, it's about taking advantage of how hacker works in the mind. It's about, that's what we did. We tried to see how we did penetration testing, how we could infer with a fairly high level of chance that we could hack into a machine with that particular exploit. And that is because we don't do a rule, simple single rule a test, like it's empty, so it should do that. We just gather information. We did a port scan. It has this and this and this port open. So we put that into our brain, into an object information pool. And then we just gather, you just say, okay, this port is UDP 389. I'm going to do some LDAP stuff, and you find some usernames, and then you put that all that information into your brain, into your object information pool. And then at a time, you may have a CGI which will trigger some remote root exploit if only you have a username. Imagine the logic tree that would be required to connect the LDAP gathering module to the CGI modules. No scanner does that because maintaining such a logic tree would just not be feasible. So what we came up is an inference engine. It's dumb AI. It's dumb artificial intelligence. But that's what they call artificial intelligence. It's artificial. We just have at the beginning an IP address or domain. And we just throw this IP address into the object pool, information pool. It will trigger the launch of the modules which want to be launched at this time. So when I'll do the demonstration at midnight tonight, what we will really see is that you'll see that modules execute themselves in parallel in some way which is not logical at first, because you don't have the view of how which information trigger which modules. The direct result of that is usually we have a scan time of 3 to 5 minutes instead of 20 minutes for a logic-based scanner. And the reason of that is that we don't have wait state. Each time an information is present, we don't have to wait for a conditional statement into our scanner to launch the actual module. Yes?
How does it deal with the honeypot?
With honeypot? Well, if a honeypot shows vulnerability, it will detect vulnerabilities, no problem.
Okay. That's
yeah.
Tell the difference between a honeypot and the real system. It's not quite that sophisticated.
I'm sorry, I didn't get it then.
I've got a pretend NT box behind my Linux network, and I specifically let you scan to it, just so that I can get your signature as you're coming in at me. It's going to know that it's there.
We do that a lot, yes.
As a real box, or is it going to...
Okay, most of the time, that's just a matter of how good you do your job and how good we do ours. If you simulate it perfectly with like an NT box, then we will pick it up as an NT box. If you don't, we will try the whole 9 yards on it, because we are not sure if it's an NT box or a Linux one. Good system for that. My honeypot system that I run to keep together intelligence, I have to do that, is about what are the new attacks. Well, my honeypot system is a VMware. And then VMware is the actual system. But I just diff it and see what are the new attacks coming to it by sniffing the path to it. Then what it is? It is Linux. It is NT. It is perfect NT signature, but then it is Linux which analyzes everything as my honeypot systems. So basically, honeypot are not an issue. If you fake things, well, if you fake it perfectly, we'll pick it up as what you faked it. If you don't, we'll just test everything. Then about the inference engine, currently we have more than 100 modules. And one thing which is very easy and I love is that coding new modules require nobody to modify the core scanner. So simplicity is good. Our core scanner is 500 lines of C. Okay, there are 200,000 and 250,000 line of C remaining for the modules. But the core of it is very simple. And then in it, we are able to control everything that we want. We have only the very simple function of an inference engine. And if someone wants to add a new feature, well, he have access to the CVS tree, if he's a developer, of course, and then he will just code the module. It's also a tremendous advantage for QA. If we want to QA a module, we run it in all kind of different situations, with or without the other modules. That has a direct result. Our time to market, we are able to integrate a vulnerability in something like 2 hours. 2 hours? And with QA, when we develop new modules, we are able to do that with a full cycle in 2 days. And then in 2 days, all our scan server are updated with a new test. That's fast, I can tell you. Oops. Okay, about the cool stuff. So what we have is a firewall scanner. So we will try to find, for example, if we can go through the firewall with some attacks that you were speaking about. They don't listen, so they won't have the benefit of knowing about it. Yes, sir, it was you. Yeah, I was speaking to you. So the only thing that I was saying is that... No, it was... Actually, I was remarking that with rightfulness, you said something about firewalls and being able to go through firewalls, so it was not just to point at you. I'm sorry? Yes, from DataProtec. Ah, no, I don't know this one.
It's attacking RFC 1918 IPs, not RFC, behind Cisco's GRE.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you can do GRE cracking. Basically, it's very weakly protected. That's a basic RFC set. And yeah, I was not speaking exactly about that, but I'll be interested about that. So the firewalls cannot just look for source port and way to circumvent some firewall. Then the cool stuff that we have is load balancer detection. Okay, you take Saturn or you take another, I won't quote too much commercial product, but you take Nessus and you just scan one web server. This is one machine with an IP and port 80 open. Okay, it will just test the whole set of CGIs on it. Tough luck. This web server is actually a load balancer with 10 web servers behind it. Congratulations, you've successfully tested 1/10 of all the vulnerability on each of the 10 servers behind the load balancer. Because the load balancer will take this vulnerability check on this CGI and say, okay, I'll give it to server 1. And then the next one, okay, I'll give it to server 5. And sure, all your vulnerability tests will be distributed in an equivalent manner to all the different web servers. We did a survey on the 500 MediaMetrix cited company, and we found that a lot of them, something like 10%, had different configuration on their load balancer, load balance web server. So basically, if you do a scan and a scan and a scan of this machine, there are odds that you'll find on one load balance machine some vulnerability. And with current scanning technology, you wouldn't. So as I said, we did reverse engineer. What's interesting is in Europe, it's a law that you can do reverse engineering. It's like, do you know underwriter laboratories? Okay. It's basically giving the right to anybody in Europe to be its own underwriter laboratory. You can take apart your car and say, is it really safe? Or you can just decompile your software. I think that should be the same. I don't understand the DMCA law at all. But anyway. Bandwidth drop and detection and adaptation. I explained that to you. Basically, it's throttling back, increasing delay or not, based on the runtime trip of the packet. And service discovery. I have HTTPS running on port 8000. Well, you want to do some scan of it. You just want to say, this is some port 8000, so it's non-standard, so I just leave it and do no test on it. You definitely want to discover what kind of service is it. It is running, you can have S-Tunnel. You know S-Tunnel? S-Tunnel is basically something which takes any protocol and converts that to SSL. If you definitely want to detect SSL and then whatever protocol is behind it. Not what our service discovery do. So these are the kind of neat stuff that we do. I'm surprised that nobody asked how we detect load balanced application.
How do you detect load balanced application?
Yeah, excellent! You win one free IP in QualysGuard. So how we detect that? It's simple. It's based on HTTP header discrepancies. So obviously it won't work for load balancer on Telnet or FTP. I have one question for you. How many load balancer for other protocols than HTTP have you seen?
I've seen the Telnet FTP.
Maybe FTP. Very unlikely, because then you have the passive connection back, which poses a lot of problems. I never saw a single one. So we detect the different load balance box based on basically the keep alive. You can do some tricks with the keep alive to see if you are distributed on only one machine with the headers. Think about all the difference in the headers that the machine gives. With time modification, with inode information, yes, you can get some inode of the machines through HTTP. I leave the exercise up to the reader. And if really you're interested, just come to me. And yes, there are in fact lots of things that you can do. Just it's a matter of trying hard enough. And lots of people are not trying hard enough when it's about their security. Okay, I'm going to go quickly on that. Basically, we are extending our API to enable anybody to give XML orders to our scanner. So basically, it's just like, forget about the UI. I have one Perl script, and I want to do 1,000 scan on 1,000 IP at the same time. You can do it. Internet scanner, that's what we lack. Basically, we have a way of doing it, which is exactly the same as we are doing it for external scan, but we just put a software which can be downloaded over the web in the inside of the company on their intranet. That's coming Q4. So the web application security analyzer. Yeah, that was very funny. I said to the CEO, we have this web application security analyzer coming. I said, oh, nice, that's great. And I said, yeah, you want to have a glimpse of it? And he said, okay, yeah. And I keep repeating that. And then I came back to the engineering team and I said, okay, for the WASA project, it's okay, we can do it. And they were like, is it a joke? No, the CEO just agreed with it. So they don't know it yet, but we are going to have a WASA product. Basically, we are taking the same approach as the vulnerability scanner, except that the entry point is a URL. We trigger a spider. The spider is a simple, something like 300-line module, because it's, if you think about it, the only thing that we have to do with our inference engine, since it re-inject information, is get URL, get the page, analyze the different links in the page, post back the different URLs. And that's our spider. In fact, it's our inference engine, which is a spider. Very efficient. We discovered that after. So once again, the simplest is the best. And then when we have this spider finding new page, each time we have a page which match certain criteria, like forms, like directories, where you can do what they call forceful browsing. Well, we do it with different modules which are very specialized. So basically, here it's about finding ... vulnerabilities, SQL meta character or shell meta character insertion, finding CVS directories inside the web architecture, to get, for example, the name of the users and also the machine which holds the repository, all this kind of stuff. Trust me, you can find. Are there some people who already did that here in the room? Legally or not, I don't care.
Did what?
Web auditing like that.
Like /.directory.
Yes, all these kind of things. Yeah, and also, what were your most common way to succeed? Yeah, so basically meta character insertion, right?
Sort of, yeah, just figure out, try to figure out what they're doing with the data, figuring out what's going into an SQL statement or what's being put in there.
Triggering fault and then inserting, yeah. So basically that's what it is. Something that I didn't put in the presentation yet, and I will do, I promise, is about the way we detect problems. We don't detect problems with signature. We detect problems with behavioral That was hard. Change. So we detect the change of behavior, for example, of a script. If I say to a script, my name is AAA, then it will respond a page. If we say then to a script, my name is semicolon, mail, less than, etc password, to some email address, and it just respond me with an interrupt value, or I receive actually the etc password in it. So basically, if you have huge differences between test pages and actual attack pages, we will trigger that there's a potential problem. This is very interesting because if you don't rely on, for example, 404 page not found to really detect if a machine has or not the script, it will get rid of a lot of false positive. And when I was presenting our intent to get rid of the false positive, which can never be done 100%, like security, it's always trying to push higher the bar. That's how we do it. We do a lot of differential analysis. And basically,
since we have differential analysis on all the requests we do and no trigger level, basically no pound define something, then it's really adapted to the machine in front of us. So that's the way we actually did it, technically. Of course, there's a way to do it differently for web pages, packets, signature, like demand figure printing. Then, here we go. The future technology. A lot is about demand fingerprinting. Basically, you can fake the response of HTTP server, of NameD with the new version 9. You can fake 8 or 9? 8. You can fake a lot of things. What you can't fake is the behavior. Is if you do a differential analysis on all the requests and the response that you have to a bind 4.9.3 and a bind 4.9. whatever, you'll get different response. It handles certain packet in different way. And this is demand fingerprinting. So you then, when you have that, you don't have to care about what operating system is running, since you know exactly what kind of software it is. This is very, very important. Also, we can dream about automatic binary reverse engineering. There's already some decompiler for Java, for example. You have, if you're up to date on the different work from some people who work on the ELF format and binary format, there's a way to reverse engineer that automatically and to find automatically if there are vulnerabilities like format string, buffer overflow, etc. So let's say that, for example, you leave your binaries of your test or of your server accessible through FTP, and trust me, that exists a lot, because they say, okay, they can't execute, they just can't download it. Well, maybe we can find some vulnerabilities which are custom to the executables that you are using. VPN testing, you were speaking about GRE, definitely. IPsec works with certificate, all right. But there's a lot of actually tunneling protocol and VPN protocols that works with fixed key, like my password is secret or 1234. Actually, in the Cisco docs, when you see the configuration for standard GRE tunnel, the password usually is 1234. So you just try to establish a tunnel with IP spoofing and using this key, no problem, and you'll get the traffic. So VPN testing is definitely something we are struggling to get. Standardization of modules and add-on. There will be a time when all the security company like us will be providing standard API. And there's already open source open source projects for that. So basically, in the future, you'll be able to say, I have a scan module standing on my server. Here is the XML API to it, and then it will do that and that on the network, and it will report this vulnerability. It's definitely a world of distribution, and that's coming. And of course, the all those other mediums like X25, like analog modems doing wire dialing or doing X25 testing, but also some other which are quite funny, like scanning the spectrum and trying to say, oh, there's a 802.11 air LAN in the area. Is it well protected? Does it have PEM? Does it have equivalency with Ethernet where you can alter your BIOS settings to actually get into the network? Well, lots of things to be done. That's the end of my presentation. But now, what do we have tomorrow? Tomorrow is about you. Tomorrow is about people like you who are doing research. I heard some people telling me, at this conference, there will be a lot of lame and hacker. I was like, okay. Basically, lamer we call today. Some of them tomorrow will be good hacker. And after tomorrow, they will be good security researcher. Without backtrack, the security community would be nothing. Without hacker, the security community on vulnerability would be zero. So basically, hacker is not a bad word. And there's a creative approach that we must retain and we must show to people. Here is about my message, basically, my personal message. Try things. Try to do some research. We do research with lots of individuals who eventually come to work with us in France. And there are talented people all over the place. And there are people who are just waiting here for just a bit of education to know where to look and then to have a creative approach. And that's the interesting thing. As I would say, there's no definite source of talent. It's not coming only from ex-NSA boy. It's not coming only from big universities. It's not only coming from the hacker kingdom. It's just coming from everywhere. So it's about being open and not being binary, thinking in black and white and gray. There are good people everywhere, and I think it has already been shown. So that's obvious. We are always looking for new contact, and if you want to just catch me during these 2 days which are remaining, thank you very much. Yes?
Well, Nick said that he's giving a free T-shirt to anybody that'll get him a job in California.
So my question, is he talented? He's not here. Okay. Is he talented then?
Okay,
bring him over. So, we'll see. Okay. Thank you very much for being there. I hope you didn't suffer too much from my bad accent. And I hope you enjoyed actually at least 1 or 2 minutes of the presentation. And if you have questions, feel free to come and to ask me. And then remember at midnight tonight, online live demonstration on the network room in the other side of the building. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.